Here are some questions from Vaishnavas listening to the podcast. I'm answering a few of these before heading off to Sagad. We're having Harinam over there. I don't know whether I'll have time to go out or meet with the devotees, have a program, and then I'll come back here again to catch Kumit. I was scheduled to stay there overnight, but seems moving up to Budapest from here would be better. So this is a question from Gornitai Das. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we often see that before the speaker starts to explain some topic, he offers prayers to his guru and to other personalities. For example, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami prays, before replying, Sutta Goswami first offered his obeisances to his guru, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, Lord Narayan, the sages, Narayan Rishi, Mother Saraswati, and Srila Vyasadeva. Why did Sutta Goswami pray to these particular personalities? Do they have a specific role in giving realization of Srimad Bhagavatam? The practice that Sutta Goswami shows is not something unusual. It's something that we also do. Devotees, before beginning Srimad Bhagavatam class, offer some pranams or obeisances. We see in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada goes through the what we call Mangalacharnam, which means the auspicious invocation. Invocation refers to invoking the mercy of powerful personalities for those whom we have a special respect and particularly to whom we have a obligation. Obviously, that one has to do and offer obeisances to one's guru. Before undergoing any type of activity, one should always remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead and remember his representative. So without doing such a thing, one is naturally and automatically condemned. So in any endeavor, particularly in glorifying Krishna, devotees offer their obeisances to their spiritual master. And then, since we're speaking, that means we're also representatives of Shukadeva Goswami. So we should ask Shukadeva Goswami's mercy to be able to elaborate further on the words that he's spoken. That in itself requires both empowerment as well as permission. What right do we have in saying more than Shukadeva Goswami said? We do have a right, because that's what preaching is. That's what teaching is about. It's about elaborating and discussing and further what is there. However, in doing that, we always have to make sure that we keep the correct siddhanta, that we're not adding to anything or taking away anything in terms of substance, and that we're really fluffing out what is there, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, in the same way that one fluffs out a ball of cotton. So we offer our obeisances in that way to Shukadeva Goswami, and of course Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and their incarnation as living present on this world at that time when Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. Narayan Rishi are living there in Badrika Ashrama. Therefore, as well as offering our obeisances to Lord Narayan, that personality who's present within everything and who is everywhere, Ishvara Sarabhuta Asham Bhuta Shuradeshi Arjuna Tishtati, we should particularly offer our obeisances to the form of the Lord who is directly present before us in the form of the deity, if for instance we're in the temple room, or that form of the Lord who is particularly incarnated and present on that planet. And of course Mother Saraswati, Shuddha Saraswati, is the personality who empowers us to speak. While we're not worshippers of demigods, but still we always offer our respects to such superior personalities as the demigods, Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, Lord Shiva, the supermost Vaishnava, in order that our service to Krishna become perfect. And this service find its peak of importance in glorifying Krishna and helping others understand Krishna. And then, of course, there's Srila Vyasadeva. He's the compiler, the author of the Vedic literature. We're touching the book that he wrote. We're elaborating on the words which he's spoken. Therefore, we should also ask his blessings. So, auspicious invocation. We need to invoke auspiciousness on our progress in devotional service. We go through so many phases of life. We have so many things to do on a daily basis. In these, we should at least remember prominent personalities in our lives, prominent personalities responsible for activities or connected to the activities that we're performing, and get their blessings, because we're living by the blessings of greater personalities. Pancha kalpa trubhyasya kripa sindhu bhaya bacha. These personalities are oceans of mercy. And patitanam pavanebhyo, even though we are very fallen, they are very kind to us. And if we ask for their blessings, we will get them. And we need as much blessings as we can get. And here's a question in Hungarian. It's relevant, and perhaps something that I've spoken about in the podcast, certainly spoken about to devotees. And this is Bhakta Balaj. He's asking, I'd like to know that at second initiation, devotees receive the Gayatri Mantra. If the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the method of self-realization for this age, then what is the need for any other mantras? Srila Prabhupada answers this question repeatedly. Technically speaking, there is no need for either chanting Gayatri mantras or for devotees to engage in deity worship and such activities which are characteristic of Brahmins if they are chanting the holy name without offense. But because most of us are not chanting the holy name without offense, therefore we need all the help that we can get in order to become offenseless. For this, devotees have to practice devotional service, and the practice of devotional service is most effectively done in the mode of goodness. In order to raise devotees from the modes of ignorance and passion to the platform of goodness, they are advised to cultivate the qualities of brahmanas, and when those brahminical qualities become somewhat manifest and there is a prevalence of that sattvic mode, then devotees are given the tools by which they can cultivate the mode of goodness further. They're given the right to worship the deity, extremely important for our advancement in Krishna consciousness and purification of the heart. And they're given the additional mantras, both the Brahma Gayatri as well as the Panchvatriki Gayatri mantras, so that by meditation on those, the heart may become purified and they may actually come to the stage of offenseless chanting. Thus, although chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is in itself sufficient when properly done, when done as is described in the Padma Purana, free of all 10 offenses, for those who are not on that stage, they should also take the benefit of chanting Gayatri Mantra and Brahman Diksha. And for those who are on that stage, because we're a preaching movement and we want to set an example for the rest of society, therefore it's important for those devotees to also perform these activities, Yadyada Acharati Srishtas, for the benefit of others. And here's the last question for today. This is from Bhakta Rajiv. He says, there is a Ritvik member who distributes books near the Soho Street Temple. Sometimes visitors who don't have any information of the Ritviks find themselves in their clutches. The Ritviks distribute a magazine called Back to Prabhupada, which is full of negative criticism, offenses towards ISKCON. Surely you know about that publication. I do, although I haven't seen one in years, and I don't want to. What should be our behavior towards them? What should we do when seeing them distributing these magazines that are destructive to spiritual health? What can be done? The Ritviks aren't the worst lot passing out things in the Soho area. There's so much hedonistic activity going on over there. People who are peddling prostitution, pornography, drugs, trying to market so many consumer items which are meant to distract people from Krishna consciousness. What can we do? We have to live with it. So similarly, Ritviks, they're also an obstruction from people understanding the path of pure devotional service, but they're on a public place. Ultimately, our best defense is an offense, and the best offense here, not being offensive, but taking the offensive stance, the best offense is education. So if we educate people as to what real Krishna consciousness is about, then the so many deviant forms of Krishna consciousness, of which Ritvik Vad is one, and no doubt there will be many others, and there are many others, will not really have an effect on people. Generally, people who are quite well educated, who are in the know, who have experience in the world, for them, this is not a new thing, that there are splinter groups, disagreements, opposing opinions. Ultimately, intelligent people will satisfy their own intelligence by doing proper research into different arguments that come up, and they themselves will see the value of the Krishna consciousness movement that Srila Prabhupada founded, and the dishonesty of such deviations as represented by the rhetorics. Of course, when uneducated people ask, then, you know, we can present our view and try to educate them. But as with so many others and other things going on in Silver Street, what do we do? What's our behavior towards them? We just ignore them. Unless they come on private property, unless they come into our temple, then we can obviously ask them to leave, because we don't let people represent views opposed to the Krishna consciousness movement, and we have every right to do that. But when they're not there, then we just deal with the fallout, and sometimes we may end up losing individuals as a consequence. But then, that's the world that we live in. That's life. Okay, we'll be in touch tomorrow, and it may be again aboard the train going up to Budapest. Hare Krishna, all the best.